I am very, very grateful for this special opportunity to be with all of you this evening. Many very old, beloved friends and some very special people I have never met. I'm so grateful to be with you. Special gratitude to our esteemed speaker. It's Dominique and Dominique. Beautiful speech that penetrated and transformed our hearts. Thank you. And my special gratitude to Ajay and Swati on this very auspicious occasion of their 35th wedding anniversary, and to their families, Lalita and Peter and Nandini and Anandaji, and to the little granddaughter. 35 years, what to speak of 45 years. As a Swami, we don't get married, so it's hard for me to understand what it takes to remain married for 35 years. But as a Swami, it's very interesting how many married people tell you their problems. And interestingly, thousands of people tell me their problems. And each one thinks it's a unique problem that no one has ever had before. And it's something that's very insurmountable to overcome. And in general, it's usually the same problems that everyone has. And what I found is, if we base our relationship on a higher principle, then the daily uncertainties, if there's one thing that's certain about this world, is there will definitely be uncertainties. If there's a higher principle, we can overcome them. My Gurudev, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, he told one story which was very interesting. It was a story about Mahatma Gandhi. He tells how Mahatma Gandhi himself told this story. He had an argument with his wife, and it was obviously a serious argument, so serious that he told her to get out of the house. So she went out of the house. And sometime later, he came out of the house and he saw his wife sitting on the roadside. And he said, "Why are you still here?" And she said, "I have no place to go." And he said, "Oh." He said, "Whatever differences we had, let's just forget it." And then they came back in the house. And they were happy ever after. Now, I thought that was pretty interesting. Because Mahatma Gandhi, throughout the world, is a symbol of peace and nonviolence. Martin Luther King, Nelson Mandela, Mahatma Gandhi was their guru for their peace movements. Ahimsa. And even he's fighting with his wife. So when I heard that story long ago, I realized what marriage is really about. Marriages, in one sense, they're made in heaven, but you have to really meet the challenge to realize that. Srila Prabhupada, he he explained, this is the peace formula for marriage. Two words, forget it. That means there is a higher principle of why we are together. For the sake of dharma, for the sake of our devotion and our vows before God, for the sake of our children, for the sake of our own, you know, spiritual salvation, this, by working things out, by focusing on the higher principle, we can resolve all the apparent quarrels or differences that we may have. Because can you imagine two false egos, ahankars, living in the same house together year after year after year? You can't make it by romance. You can't make it by apparent astrological compatibilities. There has to be a serious dedication to the principle of responsibility. And through taking that responsibility, actual love can take place between people on a very deep level. Dominique was speaking about his leprosy colony in Alta Seva, what good service he's doing there. I'd like to share a little story about a leprosy colony that I had visited, and how to this very day I accepted a leper woman as one of my gurus in life. I came to India when I was 19. I didn't know anyone. I never met an Indian in my life until I came to the border. And the immigration lady rejected me. I never ate Indian food. I never tasted a chili pepper. And I was living in the Himalaya mountains, looking for truth, looking for meaning, looking for God. I was just tired of sectarianism, egoism, and hatred in the name of God and religion. I had seen it since I was a child. I believed in God. I believed in the power of prayer. But I believed also that there was a universal principle that's supposed to transform our heart through this process. So I was searching for the essence of spirituality, the goal of religion, not the forms that cause us to hate each other, to think I am better. I was reading in all the scriptures, the meek shall inherit the earth, not the egoistic. So I studied Christianity, Judaism, I hitchhiked from London to India and studied Islam in the Middle East, and I studied Buddhism and different branches of Hinduism. And during my travels, I was walking through a forest in the mountains and I came into a leprosy colony. I just turned 20. I had never seen suffering like this. From a suburb of Chicago, very close to where Ed and Grace are from, Highland Park. And many did not have noses, they did not have fingers or toes, their faces were deformed and shriveled. Some of them were in rags or no clothes. They had no homes. They were just laying on the ground in a jungle. They surrounded me, demanding bakshish, charity. I had nothing, but they kept screaming at me, "Bakshish, bakshish." They were desperate. And they wouldn't let me go. There was about 15 of them around me in a circle. It was a culture shock. Finally, they patted me down and saw that I really had nothing. And I started walking, and I saw one old leper woman. She had white hair, not so much, deformed in every way. She offered her pranams to me as I was walking by, like this. And she looked at me with a gaze that said, "I'm sorry for what my people have just done to you." I felt in her glance the love of a mother. And she understood through my glance that I recognized what she was giving from her heart. So she put her hand out to bless me. She was just laying in the dirt. And I ran up to her and put my head under her hand to receive that blessing. Over and over again, she said, "May God bless you, my child. May God bless you, my child." I looked up and I saw tears of joy streaming from her eyes. The joy of a mother blessing a child. Something that perhaps she had no opportunity to do for decades. It was the joy of giving. She had no nose. She had no teeth. Her face was very deformed. But I can tell you, and I was just coming out of my teenage years from America, and I used to watch all those movies and everything, but she was the most beautiful woman I had ever met. Most beautiful person I had met up until that time. Beauty is not about the externals. The beauty of a person is their character. The beauty of the person is in their hearts. And if we want to find real love, real happiness in life, we do have to go below or beneath or beyond the superficial external appearances of this world. Dominique was talking about Mother Teresa. In 1971, I visited her, and she told me at that time that the problem in this world is hunger, not hunger of the belly, hunger of the heart. People are lonely, starving, and the only thing that could give satisfaction to the heart is love. She said, God's love. She said, "I go to New York and I go to London and I go to Bombay and Paris and all of these places." She said, "The very, very wealthy people there, they're starving more than these people that you see in the streets of Calcutta." She said, "When these people die in my arms, I see light in their eyes. I don't see that light in so many of the people who have so much." Real love is a thing of the heart. And that's where happiness really lies. And she told me that unless you have that love, you cannot give that love. And actually, in giving that love, that is how we receive the love. It is a process. Ajay and Swati, in their 35 years of marriage, I've known them for many years, and really demonstrate what the Gita explains is so crucial for a society to prosper, really prosper. Yad yad acharati sreshtas. That what prominent people in the world do, the common people will follow that example. Perhaps what this world needs more than anything is role models. It's due to the poverty of the hearts of the people who have that is very much the reason there's poverty and people that do not have. Ajay and Swati, they represent very deeply in my own heart the examples of integrity, generosity, and devotion. And I can say very honestly that it is people like this that are really representing the greatness of India and the greatness of humanity. And it's very much built upon the foundation of their devotion to God or to Krishna. When you build your house on a strong foundation, then whatever storms may come, the house is stable. Storms will come in life. There's a beautiful verse in the Brahma Sutra, Anandamayo Bhyashat, that every living being is seeking pleasure. That is something we all have in common. Whether we're those rats you were talking about, or whether you're the Queen of England, everyone is looking for pleasure. You know, when the rats come looking for food, they don't want to hurt anybody. They're just looking for pleasure. And whether you're an animal or an insect or a human of any status, we have this universal thing in common. Whatever interferes with our pleasure or pain or fear, we try to avoid that. What is the real pleasure we're seeking? If we can't find it within ourselves, we can't find it anywhere. There was a best-selling book that I heard of when I was a child about a man who found that his father had left him a great treasure as an inheritance. And he wanted to find that treasure. He traveled throughout so many different countries, everywhere, looking for clues of where that treasure was. He searched and searched his whole life, and ultimately, he died. And they brought his body back to his house, where he grew up. And as they were digging the grave in his own backyard, they found the treasure. There's an analogy I learned in the Himalayas that there's the musk deer who has an organ within him that has an incredible fragrance. And he wants to find the source of that fragrance, and he goes everywhere, sometimes getting all cut up looking in thorn trees, sometimes, you know, going in places where there's snakes, and doesn't know that the fragrance that he's looking for is in himself. Nitya siddha krishna prema sajja kabunoi sravanadi sudichiti koriyayudoi. That love for God is within the heart of every living being. It is our nature. It is our essence. By following our spiritual practices, by chanting God's names, we could awaken that love. And as we awaken that love, rather than trying to find happiness by taking, taking, and taking, we realize that real happiness is being an instrument in giving God's love to the world. Not my love and your love, but my love and your love has all sorts of conditionings. But God's love is unconditional, infinite, and forever. When we tap into that love, the source of all love, to be an instrument of that, that's the greatest happiness. Forgiveness, it's one of the most difficult things to do in this world. But interestingly, in all the great spiritual traditions, it has prominent importance. It's not a detail of life. It's sacred. For any relationship to have quality and endure over time, forgiveness is crucial because people are imperfect. And people make mistakes, and people do things we just don't like, and people just are not the way I want them to be. And therefore, we find among great souls of so many traditions such extreme forgiveness. Jesus Christ. It was one of his last lessons as he was being crucified. He didn't pray to God to punish these people who were torturing him. He gave a universal prayer. My Father, forgive them. They know not what they do. He was seeing beneath the external features of the leprosy that Dominique was speaking about. The leprosy of the heart. It's an external feature. Mamaivam so jivaloke jivabhuta sanatana. Every living being is a part of God. The living force that is animating this body. The living force that is perceiving through the eyes and the ears and the nose and the flesh and the brain, that living force is a sacred part of God. Somehow or other, by conditions, by experiences, by traumas, by wrong choices and karmas, people develop all sorts of different mentalities and emotions and reactions. And people are evil. We hate the disease. My mother was diseased before she passed from this world. I hated the disease, but I loved the diseased because I relate to her. When we understand our own relationship with God, we understand that everyone is our brothers and sisters. And therefore, we're able to actually forgive people. When we hold grudges against anyone, it's like holding a burning hot coal in our hand to throw at someone. Before it hurts them, it burns you. When we forgive, we are actually liberated. In family situations and social situations, it's this forgiveness that's very much the medicine that keeps us together. In the Vedic scriptures, the Srimad Bhagavatam, Parikshit Maharaj was cursed to die in 7 days. And he was a king. He could have sent all his armies to kill that little boy that cursed him. But he saw beneath the leprosy of the external appearance and understood whatever's happening, there is an inherent opportunity for me in it. Let me take these 7 days, not to reverse that curse, but let me take this 7 days to completely take shelter of the Supreme Lord. And from that event, the Srimad Bhagavatam was spoken to him, a scripture that has enlightened hundreds of millions of people for thousands of years. And he was perfected. Little Prahlad was a 5-year-old child, and his father, out of envy and fear and ego, tried to murder him in so many ways. He didn't do anything wrong. And finally, when his father, by Lord Narasingadev's arrangement, did a surgery to eliminate his father from the world, the Lord asked Prahlad, "Any blessing you want, I'll give you." He said, "The only blessing I ask for, I don't want anything for myself. Just forgive my father. Give him liberation." It was the ignorance that was the problem, not him. In the Leela of Lord Ram, love, forgiveness, and happiness is very much portrayed by their example. Ram was a incarnation or an avatar of the Supreme who appeared in this world to teach us by his example what is the standard by which we should all strive for. He was exiled by his stepmother out of envy, fear, hatred, and ignorance. She manipulated the situation in such a way that Ram, who was supposed to be coronated as the next king the next day, was exiled to live in the forest for 14 years. Ram accepted it. It's a long story, but when he told his wife, Sita, that he was going, she said, "I'm going with you." He said, "This is impossible. You are a princess. You've lived in beautiful palaces and soft, lovely beds. If you come with me, you will have to live in the jungle, sleeping on the hard ground. You've been wearing the most costly, beautiful garments. The only thing you'll wear is the dry, coarse clothes of tree bark. You've been eating fine foods. You'll have to eat raw herbs and whatever fruits we can find. You've been surrounded by walls and armies all of your life. You'll be subjected to snakes and lions and tigers and leopards and scorpions and mosquitoes and all kinds of evil people that live in the forest. No, you cannot come." Sita tried everything. And her final argument the day that I married you, my father, Janak, he made a vow before God that he was turning me over to live with you, and I would be at your side through health or disease, through good times or bad times, through success or failure, honor or dishonor. You cannot make my father a liar. I'm coming with you. To perform my dharma of being with you, heaven, living in the hell of the jungle will be better than heaven. But to not to assume these responsibilities, to be at your side, living in this beautiful palace will be like hell. And they went to the jungle together. And Ram, he was willing to fight an entire war to protect his wife. Such responsibility, such faithfulness, such loyalty. And not without differences either. Differences are always there. I was recently with the chief minister of Gujarat, Mr. Narendra Modi. We had a release of the Gujarati version of this book I wrote, The Journey Home, and he released it. And he gave a speech, and he was talking about the nature of what the world is coming to due to so many influences. He said it's become a world, you've heard of the saying, eat, drink, and be merry? He said it's become a world of eat, drink, and remarry. Easy way outs. But to actually take up the responsibility to make things work is what really brings the quality of our character and our love to the platform of being real and being deep, and connects us with God. So Ram and Sita, they wanted to show by that example that real love is developed through challenges. Later on, Bharat, Ram's younger brother, who was the son of Kaikeyi, found out what his mother did, and he totally rejected her. He renounced her as a mother, and he went to the forest to give Ram the kingdom back, because she did it all to make her son the king. And Ram said, no, you be the king. Our father has died because of his heartbreak due to this whole situation. You be the king. And then he gave him a special instruction. It's a long conversation. It's in the Ramayana. He said that you must honor and forgive your mother, Kaikeyi, and take care of her with love and devotion. I have forgiven her. I have no grudge against her. It wasn't her that exiled me to the forest. It was the envy born of ignorance that overcame her. But now she's realized her mistake. With all love and care, rule the kingdom and take care of your mother, and take care of my mother too, because she misses me. Forgiveness, even from somebody who has hurt you so bad. This is real spirituality. If we go to church, whether we chant japa, or whether we meditate, or whether we pray, or whether we do namas, whatever our particular religion, if we can't learn to be instruments of love, if we cannot forgive, if we cannot go beyond or beneath the apparent leprosy of a person's situation or our own, then it's not really religion at all. It's not really spiritual at all. It's just something very external and superficial. And this world needs so much to give this lesson to the future generations. Because children, they see more than they hear. Seeing is believing. Good examples give good foundations for people. And yes, I am just so proud of Ajay and Swati. They have given such a good example to the world. And they have such beautiful children. Anand is so eager and enthusiastic to just do wonderful things for everybody he comes in contact with and everyone else. Peter and Nandini, such beautiful people. That quality of charity, that quality of generosity, that quality of devotion. You know, sometimes mothers and fathers leave a lot of money for children, and then they become enemies fighting over it. It's just a natural thing. It happens everywhere in the world. It's happened throughout history. But what's the greatest thing that children could inherit from their parents? Values, character, integrity, love. And then whether along with that you give them billions of rupees or millions of rupees or just a little shed in the city of joy. You live an inheritance, you leave an inheritance of real wealth for the children. And this is something beautiful. Nitya Siddha. Krishna Prema Satya Kabu Noi Suravanadi Sudichiti Koriye Udoi. This chanting of God's names, this living a spiritually oriented life of seva, unselfish service, is the greatest wealth in the world. Because it cleanses the heart. It awakens our love for God and empowers us to be instruments of that love, to actually make real change and transformation in ourselves, our family, our nation, and the world. And these are some of the beautiful messages that I learned from the great land of India, from the most incredible people of India. There's all sorts of people in India, but some of the most beautiful people I've ever met. When I came home, my family was shocked, to say the least. Would you like to hear this story very briefly? I was a 19-year-old boy living in a little town north of Chicago. I was going to college. I left for a summer vacation. I promised I'd be back within 2.5 months. And years later, I returned. And when I returned, they didn't know what to expect because they were getting letters from the Himalayas where I was writing every month or so, I'm living in a cave and I'm studying the monkeys and the snakes and the leopards. And I thought they're gonna think I'm so cool. But they thought I was completely insane. And they worried like anything. I came home a hardcore ascetic from a tradition they could not understand. And I can tell you something. Their way of life was totally different than my own. when I saw them sitting in their couches and watching television, and I said, what are you doing? I was sleeping outside. But they tried to love and understand me despite the differences, and I tried to love and understand them despite the differences. And they forgave me. And I forgave them. Because we were trying to unite on this higher principle. And I can tell you, and my parents will tell you, if we didn't go through that, we could not be a fraction of what we are today as far as the respect, the honor, and the love we have for each other. My parents were Jewish. When my mother passed away, I had nothing to do with the decision, but my family, they did something that never, ever happened in the history of our family, as long as we know. They decided to cremate my mother and give the ashes to me to bring to India. Because their trips to India and meeting the most beautiful people they ever met in their world, in their lives, and they had so many friends. The culture, the traditions, the values, it was so beautiful to them. My family said, this is what your mother wants, and this is what we want. Take her ashes to India. And I did. They asked me to give the speech for her, the eulogy at her funeral in a Jewish funeral home. And the rabbi was wondering, what is this Swami giving a speech in a Jewish funeral home? But he really liked the speech. And when I took the ashes, not far from Calcutta, in Navadweep, we had 3,000 of our devotees on the banks of the Ganges, the Ganga, all chanting prayers with tears of appeal to the Lord to bestow blessings upon my mother. While all those people were chanting and praying, I placed the body of my mother's into the body of Mother Ganga. And to me, this represented what bhakti is. The unity of the physical, the emotional, and the spiritual. That is yoga. And I offered a prayer that Krishna, through the current of Mother Ganga, please bring the eternal beloved soul of my mother into the sea of your grace. And I believe from the core of my heart that that prayer was heard. They were married 58 years when my mother passed away. And I saw the challenges they had. Forgiveness and love brings about true happiness. And I'll end with Sita and Ram. They were living in the forest in Chitrakoot. And Ram and Sita said to Ram, they were living in a forest and they were just serving people. Here was the most royal king and queen with the greatest luxuries. And now they're living with tree bark in a little straw hut in a forest. And they would pick fruits and make flower garlands and give them to the different sages and rishis and holy people. And just serve people. And Sita said to Ram, I was never happier in my whole life than this life of giving, this life of serving? And Ram said, yes, these are the happiest moments of our life. So wherever we are, Srila Prabhupada, my guru, he said, happiness is not about being attached to living in a palace or being attached to living under a tree. He told me, you are too attached to living under a tree. Real happiness wherever we are, to see the opportunity to be an instrument of love and to serve. And Dominique gave this beautiful story which touched our hearts because it's the story of the wealth of giving, the wealth of humbling ourselves to recognize that God's love is the most precious thing in all of creation. And if I can just make that connection and just be a humble instrument of that love, whoever I am, whatever I may have, then we have infinite wealth. So on this very special day, let us all offer our special prayers to Ajay and Swati and their wonderful families, to bless them with more and more opportunities to affect our hearts and help to transform the world. Thank you very much.